Mental health is simultaneously big, baffling, and complicated. While physical ailments have been recognized for millennia, mental health concerns were historically explained through spiritual frameworks rather than medical ones. This historical context feeds modern stigma, though we're gradually integrating concepts like mindfulness and well-being into everyday language. The comparison between mental and physical health proves particularly useful, since mental health problems are largely subjective experiences invisible to others, framing them within more tangible references helps people grasp their reality. Both manifest in numerous ways, can result from trauma or develop gradually, range from mild to incapacitating, and often respond to treatment. However, mental health differs in crucial ways. The criteria for judging mental wellness are remarkably malleable. What we consider acceptable practice today might be condemned tomorrow. Gender expectations significantly impact assessment and treatment. Women were once the primary recipients of lobotomies, and terms like hysteria, derived from the Greek word for uterus, reflect deeply gendered views of emotional states. These expectations harm everyone. Men are expected to remain stoic, contributing to higher suicide rates, while women are unfairly labeled as inherently emotional. The brain's 100 billion neurons communicate through electrical signals called action potentials, generated by precisely structured proteins created from DNA instructions. Protein errors can disrupt this signaling, explaining genetic links to mental health issues. At synapses, neurons communicate using chemical neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin. This versatile system employs various neurotransmitters that interact with different receptors to increase or decrease neuronal activity. This chemical communication extends beyond the brain to the body. Neuroreceptors in other organs respond to bloodstream hormones, explaining how mental states produce physical symptoms. Stress hormones from a worried brain trigger muscle tension and appetite changes. The brain contains diverse neuron types organized into distinct functional regions that connect extensively with one another. This interconnectedness allows widespread influence across regions, creating the human brain's remarkable power and versatility. Depression affects between 3 and 10% of the global population and ranks as the second biggest cause of years lived with disability worldwide. It's far more than just a bad mood. Clinical depression requires at least 2 weeks of severely low mood with no obvious physical cause, loss of interest and pleasure, anhedonia, and decreased energy levels, plus at least 4 other symptoms, including excessive guilt, suicidal thoughts, impaired concentration, sleep disturbances, and appetite changes. Conflating everyday sadness with clinical depression creates significant problems. Well-meaning advice like cheer up or try exercise demonstrates a fundamental misunderstanding of the condition's severity. Media often romanticizes depression as artistic melancholy, but the reality is someone who can't focus enough to follow basic cooking instructions. Depression manifests in diverse forms beyond major depressive disorder. These include psychotic major depression with hallucinations, melancholic depression with profound anhedonia and significant weight loss, and dyspnea, where less severe symptoms typically last 2 years or more. The monoamine hypothesis suggests depression stems from insufficient neurotransmitters like serotonin, leading to medications such as SSRIs. However, this explanation is flawed. If depression were simply a chemical imbalance, antidepressants would work immediately rather than taking weeks. Research reveals 2 distinct serotonin systems in the brain with opposing effects. One boosts positive feelings, while another increases anxiety and depression. This may explain why some people experience worsened symptoms on SSRIs. As the monoamine hypothesis shows limitations, research has shifted to neuroplasticity. Evidence indicates depressed individuals have diminished neuroplasticity, effectively locking their emotional state. This reduced neuroplasticity creates physical brain changes. Depressed patients show a smaller, less active hippocampus, explaining memory problems, and deficits in the prefrontal cortex that impair impulse control and rational thinking, potentially contributing to suicidal ideation. More promising are medications targeting glutamate, which comprises about 90% of neurotransmitter presence in brain synapses. Ketamine shows remarkable effectiveness against treatment-resistant depression, often working within hours, explaining growing interest in psychedelic compounds like psilocybin that may help restore neuroplasticity. Our advanced human brains excel at finding worries beyond the tangible threats simpler creatures fear, from finances to health, appearance to relationships. Anxiety serves an evolutionary purpose. Our threat detection system activates the fight or flight response, which actually enhances performance initially by increasing muscle tension, heart rate, focus, and motivation. Problems arise when neurological systems fail to regulate threat detection properly. In anxiety disorders, the brain remains constantly primed for danger, with the amygdala playing a crucial role in determining emotional reactions and triggering fear responses. Humans worry more extensively than other species because we recognize both physical dangers and abstract concerns like social status. Our threat detection system responds similarly whether facing physical danger or giving a work presentation. The prefrontal cortex and amygdala have a complex relationship, both opposing and cooperating. While the amygdala handles immediate fear responses, the prefrontal cortex translates them into conscious anxiety and identifies abstract threats like potential embarrassment, which it then communicates back to the amygdala, triggering anxiety. Addiction targets the brain's reward pathway, a circuit in the deeper central brain that releases dopamine when something beneficial is detected. Addictive substances bypass normal neural safeguards by directly activating this pathway. With repeated use, the overstimulated reward pathway forces the brain to adapt. Imagine a small town restructuring around a massive stadium. When the stadium, drug, disappears, the town, brain, now dependent on those crowds, struggles to function. Tolerance develops as drug effects diminish over time. The brain adapts by increasing dopamine receptors, desensitizing existing ones, or recruiting neurons to suppress excessive stimulation. This adaptation creates a troubling side effect. The reward pathway becomes less responsive to everything, making normal pleasures like socializing, hobbies, and food less enjoyable. Most addicts maintain normal intellectual abilities but develop a cognitive blind spot about their habit. Their brain defends the addiction as part of their identity, making self-recognition difficult. Despite awareness, many who try to quit face significant obstacles. Research reveals an anti-reward system that induces dysphoria, meaning long-term addicts take drugs not to feel good, but simply to feel normal. After exploring mental health in depth, we're left with more questions than answers. Mental health defies precise definition due to the inherent complexity of the human mind. Stress emerges as a common thread throughout our exploration. Prolonged stress acts as the modern brain's Achilles heel, causing unhelpful adaptations that affect our thinking and functioning. It overstimulates fear-related brain regions, causing anxiety, exhausts vital areas, contributing to depression, and drives people toward relief-providing substances, leading to addiction, creating self-sustaining cycles. Understanding the interplay between brain biology, psychological processes, and social environment provides the best framework for addressing mental health issues. This understanding reduces stigma by showing that mental health problems aren't character flaws, but genuine health conditions with biological foundations. They're not all in your head dismissively, but they are literally in your head, in the complex neural networks that make you who you are. Recognizing the legitimacy of mental distress and its biological basis is the first step toward compassion for others and ourselves.